Good evening, everyone. It's nice to sit with you tonight. Glad you're here. We've been talking about the nature of the mind, and in my own practice, I don't think there's anything more important than understanding the mind, since I do believe that it causes most of our suffering, certainly mine. So there's lots to know about the mind, and the more we know, the more we understand how it causes us so much suffering. So the teachings are most important around understanding the mind. And so we talked about last week, we're into Rick Hansen's Buddhist Brain, and he reminded us of the negativity bias of the brain. It's like we hold on, we Velcro all the negative dealings daily, and then with the Teflon of the joys that we seem to miss, they just slip away. So last week, Rick said, stay with those joys. We can begin to start looking for those. And those little joys, they're not particularly big joys, but the joys that, let's say, we really enjoyed when we were 5 years old. And, you know, if you can't do that, then grab the hand of a little five-year-old and go around with her or him, and just notice what they notice, because that's what we have forgotten as adults. We didn't mean to. It just happened. But we know it's going to take an active effort to internalize these positive experiences. So there's got to be an intent. It has to be brought into our practice in order for it to heal the negative ones. And nothing's wrong with the negative, but we need to know what to do with them, where we're not creating more suffering for ourselves. And so Rick told us, we talked about it last week, to stay with it and to notice the little joys of life. Like looking at the sky, walking in nature, hugging your dog or your cat, or looking in your grandchildren's faces. You know, these types of little things that come to us consistently and constantly throughout the day that we are kind of conditioned to just dismiss. And so that's what he's talking about, because if we do consciously stay with the joys, then we are, instead of just, it's just hit and miss, we are embodying the joy. Instead of just, yeah, there you are, joy. So, and that takes a few seconds and an intention. And so that's what he said about staying with those little joys for 5, 10, 20 seconds. Be aware of them. Let them in. Let the goodness in. And it's quite healing. Now, this is different than positive thinking or, you know, positive thinking is we're creating something in our mind to tease us with. Well, no, we're not creating anything with this practice. We are just being with, and we know how to do that because we've practiced. And so it's not creating a positive mind state. It is slowing down, setting an intention, and stay until the joy has gone. Each joy has a life of its own. So we know we can't grab a hold of it because that just, we're right back into suffering. But we can notice if we are enjoying our joys. And when we tilt toward what's positive, really, we're riding, as we talked about last week, a neurological imbalance, because we have that imbalance. That negative bias is in all of us. So, again, it helps with balancing our lives. There's this 10, as the Buddha says, there's 10,000 joys and there's 10,000 sorrows. And we're going to remember those 10,000 sorrows, but now we're working on being with the 10,000 joys. So, and we also know to rain on them. We know how to, we've using that tool throughout the day, all the time in our lives, where we're recognizing what's going on and allowing what's going on, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. And then we're learning how to directly experience it all through the body, not through the mind, but through our bodies. And it's a whole different way of perceiving, a whole different way of living. And we're noticing that we're giving ourselves the caring and the encouragement that we deserve. And that's most important for our well-being. Because some of us didn't receive as much as probably we needed or wanted as we were growing up, and there's certainly no one to blame, so we don't want to get in the blaming stage or blaming mind, because that's just counterproductive. So focusing on what is wholesome and then taking it in naturally. We're not creating anything. We're just taking it as it is. And that increases the positive emotions flowing through our mind each day. And emotions have global effects. We talked about that last week. Because if there are certain kinds of emotions that are not processed in a healthy way, that's why we have war. That's why we have racism. That's why we have all these things in our lives that disconnect. So, consequently, positive feelings have a far-reaching benefit. And so, even science tells us, with this balance of the positive and the negative, that we have a stronger immune system, helps our heart. The cardiovascular system is less reactive to the stress. So, you know, there's lots of good reasons of why we should take this right effort. And there's a saying that your mind takes its shape from what it rests upon. Where are we resting our minds? Now that's interesting. I've seen it in my own practice because there's certain movies, and I love the series, you know, I watch them, but, you know, there's just some that I don't want to rest my mind on. And so I don't choose those anymore. So the mind takes its shape from what we rest the mind upon. And so recent science makes it clear that your brain takes its shape in that way. So do we continuously have an impact on the brain that produces the thinking? Absolutely. So it's never too late. And through having a sense again and again of the balance of the loving kindness, of wholeness, of allness, nowness, timelessness, we'll be weaving these qualities into our own nervous system. And so, again, a good practice is to bring the rain on it, recognizing the joys, allowing them to be there, be with them, experience them in the body. And all of that nurtures that effort. And so when something is painful, stressful, or upsetting, we can intend to pause. And the longer we practice, the stronger that sacred pause becomes part of our everyday life. And so we can notice our reactions to all the suffering. And remember, we've talked about the suffering. Most of it comes from the mind, and it's all optional. So we recognize, allow, and we go to our body, allowing it to directly experience life. That is where life is experienced completely. And we have to see that for ourselves, because then that is what sustains this practice, is we directly experience the benefits of it. And we can ask ourselves, are we minimizing what are our joys, are denying the parts of our life that is hard for us? Because until that denial is allowed, recognized and allowed, it's going to stay around. And so it's important to stay awake and sometimes just acknowledging what's going on. I told you this story the other day that Randy and I were out and about, and finally I said, you know, I am so agitated this morning. I mean, everything was irritating me. You know, the Buddha himself could be in front of me. I'd be irritated by the Buddha. And Randy said, I'm so glad you said that. He said, because I was taking it personally. He thought I was after him. And that's so sad for me. But also just naming it. Oh, I'm irritable. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, this hurts. I'm a little sad. You know, if we could just learn to, and I know those are things that we can practice with the people we love and understand us the most. So along with the basic acknowledgement, intend to have feelings of support and compassion for ourselves. I Well, I can't say it enough. And being aware of how we might be adding this suffering. I know where my suffering comes. It's rehashing what's happened in the past that I wished hadn't happened, you know? Or getting stressed about little things. That's one of the things I've noticed in my own practice is, you know, I used to could really get caught in these little things of the day, like dropping something or, you know, just the little things that, you know, we do because we're perfectly imperfect, and yet we grab on to it and, you know, carry it a lot longer than it needs to be. So that's helped me a great deal. I'm a lot less stressful when I make mistakes or I drop something or something's not going my way. Now, we're not going to be counting today when I was wallpapering. Let's don't be counting that because I was doing a lot of yelling. Did you hear me, Randy?
A few cuss words.
But, you know, I knew I was cussing. And so when we see ourselves doing this, we can slow down with the sacred pause and see if we can make a deliberate choice to shift. The first time I could do that, I don't even know when it was, I was just amazed at myself. I mean, it was just such an insight that it was closer than close. Jan Frazier, who is a meditation teacher, I really like her, but that's what she said. If we only knew how close freedom and peace were, she says they're closer than close. And we begin to make a deliberate choice to stop fueling and reinforcing these add-on sufferings. But again, have to remind ourselves that we're perfectly imperfect. So I'm not about to deny my behavior with the wallpaper today. It was there and it was okay because only Randy heard the cussing. And fortunately, I have a person that I live with that will ask me every once in a while, what is my attitude in my mind at any given time? Usually, he'll ask me that question when he is up against, some stress. He's seen some stress in myself. And, you know, I told you last week it used to just make me so angry when he was that honest, when he was more honest than I was about myself. But gradually, you know, it kicked in. So old habits take a while. So give yourself a lot of space to do it wrong. As much space to do it wrong as you do it right. And it can shift. It truly can shift. And, you know, we have the skittery attention. The steadiness of mind is important in daily activities, not just during meditation. We need to be able to keep attention on what's useful and shift it away from what's not. But boy, oh boy, look where we find ourselves. We find ourselves in the information age, and we find ourselves in a culture that seems to be in the way of doing things on steroids. Did I say it right? Steroids. You know, everything's just faster than fast. So it's no wonder, our culture's not helping us, but the teachings will. But Rick said our temperament has a lot to do with how we are managing our stress. And he categorized it into areas. The Buddha said wholesome and unwholesome thoughts. And Rick Hansen says in the Buddha Brain that the normal range of temperament of us, and in the teachings, the Buddha taught to, he said, to people's temperaments. He knew them. So they're important. And Rick says, in a big way, there's the temperament who likes a lot of novelty and excitement. That's me. And there's a temperament that lacks predictability and quiet. That's him. We know that's our tendency. Now there's a balance. It's when that gets out of balance. But we know that about ourselves, especially now that Rick's brought it to our attention again, because our temperaments are different and they should be honored. So he says people at the high or low end of this range often face challenges. I was reading this part of this lesson to a friend the other day on the phone, and she says, well, I seem to be both. I said, yeah, absolutely. But there's a balance. You know, there's that equanimity that kicks in that allows us not to go from one extreme to the other. But knowing one's temperament, you know, it is important. So I am going to stop there. And let's see if there's anything I want to say before I stop. Learning to live happier lives includes healing from the past. Healing from our past. Disengaging from bad habits. Not judging us, ourselves. Acquiring good ones. We can do that. And seeing things in new ways. And just feeling better about ourselves has an incredible impact on our mind states. So we'll continue to talk about the nature of the mind and some other things that maybe Rick Hansen and others can remind us in working with mind states. So thank you. And now we'll open it up.